You know, I wanted to share. I knew we'd have. I knew we would be doing communion, and I've got to say, I'm going to give you a little behind the scenes look. Many times the worship team they put together the worship sets together, and the Lord really led. Jason would put this, I think, this set together. The group did. What you just sang is really such an incredible focus of what I want to talk about for just a few minutes today, actually. You know, I don't know if you are out in a place where you interact with people a lot. I purposefully put myself in situations where I interact with people a lot. Because I'm here, because, you know, small church, really only staff. That's why I love having Chris use this office. He's a great help. But I'm kind of by myself a lot, so I try to really put myself in situations where I see people, talk to my neighbors, and have, you know, and have conversations. Probably much to my family's frustration sometimes. But I really enjoy talking with people, especially people who are hurting and have needs. Not that I like to see people hurting, but I like to be able to be where I have an answer to something. Isn't that a great feeling when you are in your life and maybe you work in finance, or, you know, maybe you work in the computer industry, maybe you work, you know, with cars, and somebody has a problem, they go, oh, I don't know what to do, and you know the answer? There's something really satisfying about that, and I love to find people who are living without purpose, living in fear, living in frustration, and yet, many times we have situations where people make criticisms. You know, anytime you try to shine your light out, like we just sang about, you're going to have people who are going to be critical. They're going to try to attack you. They're going to try to attack your faith. They're going to try to attack Christianity. And sometimes they make these little potshot statements that are so fast, you know. But you know, we want, especially once they find out I'm a pastor. They'll go, hey, why don't you guys come out and do this? Let's go to this party. Let's stop by this bar. And do, oh, well, of course, you're a pastor. So, and then they walk off. And you go, wait, what? You know? Or they'll be talking about something, you know, and they'll go back and forth. Oh, well, I know. I know you wouldn't do that because you're one of those born-again people, right? What you said, that was from the Bible or something, wasn't it? Because I know you kind of read that. You know? And they take these little shots. You ever had this? And it's not like they're saying, you know, I've been investigating religions. Let's talk. No, it's these little quick pot shot things that they give you, they throw out, and then just vanish. And so what do you say to people when you don't have a lot of time, when they maybe have very little interest? And I have to say, and those of you who get the weekly email don't know this part either, but I started working on this message, and it's really turned into a series. It's going to be a few messages. So this one today is just going to be kind of a teaser introduction, but also I'm going to give you one very important thing that you need to walk away with. Now, I'm going to give you some other points, you know, stuff to fill in, because some of you just love that, and I'm one of those people. I love to fill in stuff. But there's one section you can't miss. You can't miss this. You need this for your life. I need this for my everyday life. This is what I take to me in the neighborhood. This is what I take to me, you know, when I get, you know, if I go down and get a, you know, chai latte, if I go whatever, if I go down and I'm going to the gym, I take this. This is vitally, vitally important. But let's first of all talk about this. You know, what do you say in some of those situations? You guys have get around with family. Like, you ever had this happen at holidays? They take little pot shots at you at Thanksgiving, and then you drive away and you go, oh man, now I know what I should have said. Now you got to wait a whole year, right, till next Thanksgiving, till you can use your really clever answer. Sometimes we don't say anything at all. And some of the things that people kind of take pot shots at sometimes are, for example, the Bible. You know, and that's a very classic one. The History Channel just did a thing on it, and I have never seen such a lack of scholarly information in all of my life. I like the History Channel, by the way. I watch it a lot. I mean, that's where I've got to watch Swamp People, right? right? I think Pawn Stars is on History too, right? But I like the History Channel. I like some of the stuff they have. They're doing something on the wars that really looked good. I didn't get to see it, but have some great stuff. I never saw so much lack of credible intellectual stuff. But It's, we're going to teach you about the Bible. And there's people who are going to walk away and go, wow, now I really understand the Bible. What are the kind of things they criticize? Let's throw out just talking about the Bible. The typical erroneous pot shots. And there are some pot shots that we could say maybe are legitimate. Like if you hand them a King James Version and they go, it's kind of hard to understand. You know, yeah, it's Elizabethan English. But, you know, from the actual content of the Bible, they'll talk about, oh, it's out of date. What's out of date? The morals, the, you know, the pattern, whatever, the seemingly the way God works and all of this kind of stuff, way, way, way out of date. Even you talk about the Ten Commandments. There used to be a day and age where people say, you know, hey, you live by the Ten Commandments. I don't hear that so much anymore. You know why? People started reading them. It's like, what? I got to stop envying my neighbor's wife? What? I got to do this? I don't hear that anymore. I used to hear that, but I don't hear that so much. Why? It's so out of date. I mean, come on, this is 2014. Another thing, people will talk about that it contradicts itself. You ever heard this? Contradicts itself. And seemingly, there are places where it really feels like it does. But it's amazing. Scholars have found that there are absolutely no, if you were to take and chart out all of the quote-unquote contradictions, scholars have found that in all of the alleged contradictions, that there is not one single contradiction that would negate the foundation of Christianity. You know, there may be some historical things. You go, wait a minute. Sometimes you read through the gospel and you go, wait a minute. Was it three cock crows and then Jesus said this, or was it, you know, crow, Jesus thinking, crow, Jesus, you know, right? Because you try to morph those together and you go, wait, what really happened? With the different gospels, absolutely not one single contradiction can you ever find that people will claim is in the Bible ever has shaken anything foundationally with regard to Christianity. Kind of interesting. That's a sideline. This is a big one. There's a British guy who's become very, very famous and kind of just totally dissing on the Bible when it comes to science. And so they say it isn't scientifically accurate. Creationism gets, of course, criticized. Miracles get, you know, criticized. And they claim that since the Bible contains so many miracles, it just can't be true because it's not scientific. And either they're just made up, or maybe they've been exaggerated, or maybe, you know, they're just simple people. Scientists love to take this angle. You know, these were just simple, simple, uneducated people, and they were easily tricked. You know, and in reality, you know, just one miracle, think about it, just one miracle is too much for the modern mind, right? Because what do? All it takes is one. Why? Well, you know, and unfortunately, much of our Western thinking, I should say globally, really, much of our Western thinking is grounded in what we call naturalism, which is a worldview that believes that the physical and material world exists. I think I shared with you, you know, I don't make comments on articles that often, but I made a comment on something that was posted. I think it was at AOL or something, but I made a comment, and this guy kind of came back with this, you know, kind of very atheistic, kind of naturalistic, actually, answer. And I said, hey, I'm just curious. I said, I'm not bantering with you or even arguing with you. What do you think happens to people after they die? And he goes, it's depressing. I mean, it's really depressing to me that after we're done here on the planet, that's it. And I'm thinking, this guy's not only, I mean, he's, you know, in a sense, torn by his own philosophy that it's like, yeah, well, once we're done here, that's it. We're done. We're finished. And, but based on this perspective, anything supernatural, such as a miracle, anything like that, is immediately suspect. So they say it isn't historically accurate. This is also being less and less, and I think that's why the History Channel really made that their point. And they did a really poor job in some sections, I have to tell you. I'll give you an example, the one that you hear, and I think the History Channel talked about this. Some say that the Israelites were never, ever in Egypt, and there was never any Exodus. Now, that's a pretty big story. I mean, we're talking, right? We got a whole book of the Bible called Exodus. And they say that, there was no entering into the promised land. They say that this because there was no mention in Hebrew, in hieroglyphics inscriptions. There's no mention of Hebrews at all. So in all of the Egyptian hieroglyphic stuff, they can't find it in their history. There's no mention of Moses. There's no records of such a mass population movement as, you know, claimed in the Bible account. You don't find it in Egyptian history, ancient Egyptian history. One famous little mention, and this is kind of funny. It's kind of like a kid saying, I can't see you because I got my eyes closed. One famous inscribed stone slab states, Israel, his seed is not. In other words, it's almost like saying, if you're wondering if there is an Israel, there isn't one. And they almost condemn themselves by this. But what they don't understand, and what the History Channel even, or you know, any historian who claims the Bible's not historically accurate, isn't understanding, is Egyptian history in general. Because, you know, even in that statement, they'd say, oh, you want to know about Israel? Oh, it doesn't exist. Or it doesn't exist anymore. And this was a well-known Egyptian tendency to do this. Egyptians, they never recorded history that was condemning. They would never record anything negative that would embarrass the majesty, the pharaoh or whatever, the ruling monarch at that time. They would completely obliterate that from history. And if they ever found it, in fact, it was illegal to post anything like that. So no pharaoh ever wanted these words chiseled into his monument. Under my administration, a great horde of Hebrew slaves successfully exited Sinai Desert, and we tried to prevent them, but we couldn't. There's no way a monarch wanted that in their history, see? So they eliminated all of that. So that's just a little example. That's just a little teaser. But there's so many things, you know, that they would say. Another one's archaeology. It's not archaeologically accurate. Any of you see that really great biblical movie, you know, about the flood recently? Noah, you know? Boy, that one. Boy, you almost could bring your Bible and follow along, right? Yeah, tree monsters and everything. I don't know what it was. Rock monsters? Yeah. And I so know, and it's a good thing. Some of you are going back in Genesis going, wait, where's the rock monsters? I can't find that. Pastor Dave, where's the rock monsters? No, that was, thank you, Hollywood, very much. But you know, a lot of people look at it that way. Oh, Bible's got some good stories in it, some cool stories. But, so people deny the flood, actually. And even make movies about it and twist it, and not just the Hebrews in Genesis, 6-8 talks about that, but Mesopotamians, the Egyptians, and Greeks, all, if you go back in their history, this is where we do find consistency. This isn't just a Bible thing. In ancient history, you actually do find, again, the Mesopotamians at least, the Egyptians, the Greeks, doing this off the top of my head, they all recorded about a mass flood, about a worldwide flood. A Sumerian king lists from 2100 BC divides itself actually into categories before the flood, after the flood. So it's kind of interesting, just that whole thing. But so Bible gets it a lot. That's one of the big ones. A second thing that gets criticized, people take pot shots at church, right? Church. Because all the church wants is your money. Oh, you got that fast. All they want is your money. That's all they talk about. It's boring. They're judgmental. They're homophobic. I don't like organized religion. The church is full of hypocrites, right? People are weird. Well, that's true, though. Some people just say, I just don't have time for it. I just don't have time, Did you know, you may not realize this, and this statistic just recently from John Ortberg, who has pastors Menlo Park Presbyterian Church in Menlo Park, did a study, and just a little over 2% of people in the Bay Area attend church at all. I mean, throw it all in. I mean, everything. I mean, any denomination, any cult, anything, go to church at all. They get ready, go to church on the weekend, 2%. People just kind of don't like church for some reason. Denominations, that's another one. People don't like denominations anymore. I remember, of course, now let me say, I'm going to really date myself. But I remember back when I was a kid, when if you said you were non-denominational, it meant you were charismatic. I think they were the ones that kind of led the way on this, you know, that not charismatic in a good way, and not charismatic even just with a spiritual gift, but you know, kind of the hanging from the chandeliers, jumping a pew, kind of, you know, that old line, maybe Pentecostal, but people don't like the politics, the seemingly unaccountability, the whole thing with the Catholic Church, some of that stuff that's gone on, the televangelists, all of that. They're just kind of sick of that, and they kind of really sometimes tie it into certain denominations. And that's why many churches call themselves now non-denominational. We were part of a fellowship from the time our church actually started completely as a non-denominational church. If you don't know the history, we actually started off a branch off of a covenant church, the one on Buchanan, and called Antioch Bible Church. And then some people that were Baptists came and helped build church, Hillside. And Hillside joined a fellowship called the General Association of Regular Baptists. We weren't Southern, not Northern, just regular. It has nothing to do with fiber, but that was a fellowship, and it's by definition non-denominational. And there's over 250 Baptist denominations in the world, so we decided this is confusing, so let's call ourselves Hillside Church. But a lot of people then, who even are denominational churches, change with the name of the denomination. For example, the largest church here in the Bay Area. Is a Baptist church, and yet the Baptist General Conference decided to change its name to what's it called? It's called Converge Worldwide, right? So are you a Baptist church? No, we're a Converge Worldwide church. So you know, why is that? Because the world just got sick of denominations. And they'll criticize you. And some of you have, I have a Baptist background. I grew up, you know, when I was little, I was at Presbyterian church. And then when I accepted Christ, I was actually at a Baptist church. And people will criticize that because of certain things. God also gets criticized. Now we're really getting to where it is. And this is where some of my friends who have absolutely no church background, why? Now, I never really criticize my friends for criticizing me. Or criticizing my God. Why? Because sometimes we do that, but have you read the Old Testament lately? I mean, seriously? I've been going through some of David's life, you know, David and the Bible's life, and there was a point when I read through that section of the Bible when David numbers the people. Now, it was very clear that he did that out of pride, and God was not pleased with it. In fact, even his captain of his army, Joab, said, David, You got this huge army. You're the strongest in the world. You got this, the God of, you know, the number one, the right God on your side. You don't need to do this. In fact, Joab finished it. Didn't even finish it. He was so sickened by it. But David says, no, I want a number. And it was a pride thing. Well, got through the number, and then David all of a sudden realized, this is awful. This is bad. This is not right. And he goes to God and repents. I've been prideful before and had to come before God and repent. But I'm sure glad that his answer to me wasn't what David's was to David's. He goes, okay, you're going to be punished. And I'm giving you a choice of which punishment. Pick your poison. You know, David picks what he thinks is the most gracious option because of being just in God's hands. 70,000 people are killed by an angel that God sends. In fact, God finally says, okay, hey, 70,000, that's enough. I mean, the angel was ready to just wipe everybody out. And God, it's the Bible says, showed mercy. 70,000. And in a passage when I almost sensed as a father, when I, you know, when looking, David's looking at these people, 70,000 people killed for his sin. And he's going, God, you should have just wiped me out. He says, what did these sheep do? You read it. It's heartbreaking. And you think, and then we criticize people for criticizing God. You see God telling him, go in and wipe it all out. Will we ever understand why God said, and we can rationalize some things, maybe even politically or strategically, why did God go and say, men, women, children, in some cases, wipe them all out? I don't get it. I don't understand that. And people will sometimes criticize, God is so mean. But what's interesting, and most often God gets criticized because of suffering in the world, right? There's suffering. How do we answer the suffering? How could a loving God... ... You know what's interesting? As a pastor, ironically, suffering is what I think keeps non-Christians from becoming Christians the most. But in my, you know, over 26, 27, 28 years of ministry, suffering is the thing that tends to make Christians grow the most. When you're following Jesus, suffering tends to make you stronger. When you're not following him, it's the thing that can obviously sometimes be distracting. And people claim that belief or faith in God is not compatible, you know, sometimes with rationality. You know, go back to the scientific stuff. They criticize, of course, us as Christians. Life, like we just talked about the church, but since the church is people, people are accused of being hypocritical, judgmental, stingy, homophobic, closed-minded, you know. They criticize our morality, providing we have it, right? They'll criticize our lifestyle. Hopefully, we're reflecting Jesus well. And then just religion in general. Some people just simply despise anything that looks religious at all. And typically, in my experience, I've found that's usually because somebody has had something happen in their background that's been painful, you know. Here's something really interesting, though. This is what's really, really fascinating. And I'm not saying this point blank, 100%, always, always true. But have you found people generally don't take shots at Jesus? They don't typically knock him. I mean, just historically, the historical Jesus, they don't typically, they either admire him, they may not accept him, they may not follow him, they may say, I mean, I'm not a Christian or whether. They either admire him to a certain extent or quote him, or sometimes they'll misquote him. You know, it's like Jesus said, you know, don't ever judge anybody. Well, Jesus didn't say that, but they'll try to attribute good things. Well, Jesus said you've got to love everybody, and that's why you should let me live any way I want. They'll use things out of context, right? But Jesus doesn't get a lot of bad publicity, really. Now, you go to certain parts of the country or even certain parts of, you know, San Francisco, and you can find people dressed up like him and saying that they are him, and they're not. But Jesus, you don't find that with Buddha, do you, as much? But Jesus, right, people claim to be him, and they say, you know, oh, Jesus, good guy. Even my Jewish friends. Well, he was a good teacher, you know. He was a good prophet, depending on, you know, the perspective. Most religious and even irreligious people alike will argue that Jesus taught some good stuff and was generally a good person. 1 Peter says something very interesting to us. In 1 Peter 3:15, this is what's going to launch kind of this little series. I'll probably do a couple of messages just on this because I just got so full and I don't want to keep you all day. 1 Peter 3:15 says, but in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. You know what he's saying? Hey, decide once and for all. It's kind of like Joshua 1:8, you know, choose this day whom you're going to serve. Decide once and for all, is Jesus going to be your Lord? Are you going to follow him or not? So put in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. And then he says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the, what? Say it. Hope. For the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. And this is kind of one of the things that launch because we miss this sometimes. So we're going to talk about that later, another day, about the gentleness and respect part. Here's what gets us. What he's not saying is several things. I had you read that word. He wants you to give an answer of the hope. Because here's sometimes what we think we have to be ready for. We have to be ready to prove that God exists. He never says if you prove that God exists. Do you want to know something? Do you know God doesn't even prove that God exists? Who can recite the very first verse in the Bible? In the beginning, God, right? He doesn't even try to prove he exists. Just says, in the beginning, God, that's it. And sometimes we're like, oh, we're getting these debates. God does to exist. You have to look at the trees, look at the sky, look at this. Yeah. I mean, the heavens declare the glory of God, but you won't find that they prove he exists, you know? Another thing, what we want to do is he's not saying be able to very intelligently and in detail explain your worldview, your Christian worldview. Now, I want to have a Christian worldview. It's one of the reasons why I decided to send my kids to Christian school, you know, was, hey, as when they're little, I want them to be able to have a Christian worldview and to be able to take that. Another thing, now this may seem like a little bit of overlap, but he also says this in saying, I want you to be able to defend the Bible. I mean, remember all that Old Testament stuff? I got to tell you, I've been studying the Bible since I was 10 years old. Went to Bible college, went to seminary, I've been trying to study the Bible, tried to read the Bible every single day, put these messages together every week. And the fact of the matter is, there are sections I still scratch my head over. And it's just like, it's like us saying, explain the Trinity. Can't. You just can't do it. I mean, people try to do it with an egg and a book and the sky and all. It doesn't work. It's one of those things that's just too big. And so God doesn't say, be ready always to answer the biblical questions that your friends raise. Another thing is to defend Christians in the past. Hey, there's some marked difficulties in the past, right? What about all those Christians that were, persecuting people, and what about the Anabaptists? What about these people? What about what about the Inquisition? What's about? And God doesn't say be prepared always to answer every question with regard to history. Number five, it doesn't tell us to be ready to explain why some Christians don't behave properly. My next door neighbor, he says he's a Christian, but you know what he does, right? So. That's a really difficult thing. But he doesn't tell us to be defend. He also doesn't tell us to defend our church. But there is one question that all of us need to be able to have in our pocket, have in our heart, really, to be able to have a quick answer to one particular question. There's one question. And everybody needs to know how to answer this one question. And that one question is this. Why have you chosen to follow Jesus? Why have you chosen to follow Jesus? Okay, people aren't walking. You're thinking, no, wait. I've never had somebody walk up to me and say, hey, why are you following Jesus? No. This is for you. This is a question for you, okay? Why have you chosen to follow Jesus? Now, I'm not going to get into the whole Calvinistic Arminian thing. Did we choose him or did he choose us? All right, wait. I think the answer is yes. But you need a statement, especially when you get into those situations, that encapsulates the answer to that question. Why do you personally follow Jesus? Got my friend who's in this kind of weird, new age kind of weird thing. It's really, I don't even know what it's got some long name and metaphysical, blah, 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 and whatever. And, he has answers as to why he believes all this, But you've got to be able to answer why this is. Now, all that other stuff, by the way, I think it's great. I love talking about the Bible. I love talking about the end times. I love talking about creation. I love talking about all that stuff. All those things that we mentioned, the church. I love talking about all this stuff, and it's not unimportant. It's just that how many times have you really gotten opportunities to go into detail in some of those other things? They'll take pot shots at denominations and pot shots at God and all this kind of stuff. What about all those wars when God told you to wipe out everybody? God seems mean because he lets children die and he's, what about all of that? And so I wanted to find an answer to that question that I could take with me no matter what the situation was. And where I got this from? I got it from Peter. Peter gives us an answer. And Peter says, I'll give you, we just read from 1 Peter. He says, I'll give you what my reason is. In fact, I was going to say a phrase. It's a one-word answer. Peter, why is it that you follow Jesus? Just tell me, why is it you follow Jesus? One word. Resurrection. What's your hope? Resurrection. What do you mean? Well, it's like this. Saw him die, died on the cross, we buried him. Boom. 3 days later, I'm having lunch with him. You can say anything you want. You can tell me he was crazy. You can tell me he was not God's son. Hey, but I'll tell you what. When I see somebody dead and they rise again, I'm going to follow them. Look what Peter says. This is actually, that's kind of Peter's one-liner. But look in 1 Peter 1:3. It says, In His, God's great mercy, He has given us new birth into a living hope. How? Through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Now, resurrection's a big deal around here. Those of you, you know, say, this sounds like an Easter message. Every Sunday's Easter to me. Every day is Easter. Jesus is alive. You know, that's not just a historical event. That is a fact. Jesus is alive. Peter was willing to give his life for Jesus because Jesus was dead and is now alive. He understood some great theological stuff. Remember, he's even the one that said, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." Of course, you know, a minute later, he's saying all kinds of weird stuff, wanting to build temples, and, you know, and Jesus is having to say, "Get thee behind me, Satan." But Peter got it. He said, "My hope comes through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead." He was willing to give his life for Jesus. Not before, right? He talked a good talk. "I'll never deny you." Of course he does. He's famous for it now. He's famous for his denial. And after Jesus rose from the dead, you couldn't stop him. You couldn't stop him. And that was Peter's one-line answer. Why do you personally follow Jesus? Because of the resurrection. Look at this also in 1 Peter 1:21. "Through him you believe in God, who raised him from the dead and glorified him, and so your faith and hope are in God." Now, since you have an answer to that question, my suggestion is that you do what Peter did. And in that answer includes something about the resurrection. Because, you know, anybody can die. There's a lot of martyrs, and there's a lot of good martyrs. When we celebrate Memorial Day, we celebrate people who have given their life for us as Americans. And that is commendable. But would I die because somebody else died? 1 Corinthians, look at Peter. We need to do what Peter did. Include something about the resurrection. Look at 1 Corinthians 15:14. "And if Christ has not been raised, what in the world are we doing here? And if Christ has not been raised, our preaching is useless, and so is your faith." Now, we can agree on that, right? Wouldn't it be silly to follow a historical figure? I mean, we could have a club, right? But to be worshiping, to be, you know, devoting our lives, to say, "I'm a follower of Jesus," and then have him not be... He said, if he hasn't been raised, this is useless. Our faith is useless. And the reason why, if you think about it, the reason why you accepted Jesus Christ, if those of you who have, are Christ followers, the reason why you accepted Christ is because Jesus is who he said he is and because he rose from the dead. That's why. If he had just died, you know. And we need to all become comfortable with including that in our conversations. That's the... To say, yeah, hey, Jesus died for the world. Yeah, I'm telling you, there's a lot of people who believe Jesus died for the world. There are denominations who believe, and there's Catholic denominations that don't believe Jesus physically rose. You know, your Jehovah's Witnesses friends do not believe that Jesus bodily, physically arose from the dead. They don't believe that. There's plenty of people who go to church and say, "Jesus died for us," who don't believe Jesus rose physically, historically, from the dead. So we need to become comfortable when we're letting that hope out to people. So here's my suggested answer. I suggest we do what Peter did, and I'm kind of paraphrasing what Peter might have said. He might have said something like this: "I believe Jesus died for my sin and rose from the dead. I believe Jesus died for my sin and rose from the dead." Hey, let's read this out loud together, okay? So we're practicing here. Now, if you're not a Christ follower, this isn't a trick. Saying, "Oh, as soon as I say this, now I'm going to be a Christian." No. I'm not tricking you. All right? This is, you can say whatever you want to during this. But this is our conviction, right? All right? So let's say this together. "I believe Jesus died for my sin and rose from the dead." Hey, sure, I can see where you're coming from. Yeah, I can see why you don't understand why God lets suffering in the world. But you know, there's one thing I can say for sure. I believe Jesus died for my sin and rose from the dead. Man, I do not have the answer to that Bible question. But you know, one thing I know is that Jesus died for my sin and rose from the dead. I don't understand why you got diagnosed with cancer. I don't understand. I know God loves you enough because I believe that Jesus died for my sin and rose from the dead. Jesus died on the cross for your sin and rose from the dead. See, I mean, right? Jesus died for my sin and rose from the dead. I don't have the answer to all of your questions. I don't know everything about the Bible, but I believe Jesus died for my sin and rose from the dead. Now, the Bible tells us to be salt and light. And light's intriguing. Have you ever had somebody do this? Being deaf in my left ear is frustrating. Some of you didn't know that, but I'm almost completely deaf in my left ear. So some of these people will talk about something, and I'll say, what? And they'll go, oh, nothing, never mind. They get frustrated, you know, never mind. And I go, what do you want to hear then? The only thing on the world you want to hear is what they just said because you missed it, right? What? No, tell me. And then when they tell you, usually you're disappointed, but because it really wasn't that exciting. But it's like, what? I want to hear that, right? Or somebody will go, oh, look, and you run out and go, what? Oh, it's gone. That'll bug you all day long. It's like, what? I want to see that. What was that? It's gone. Sorry. Okay. Light. Salt. Now, I'm not a person who hangs out at bars, but I've walked by enough and I've been around enough of them to see they always put salty stuff. Why do they put salty stuff on the bar, for crying out loud? Yeah, this isn't rocket surgery, is it? Right? Some of you are very awake today. Yeah. Right? Salty. Keep you drinking. Right? Gets you salty. And isn't it interesting? Jesus told us to be salt and light. We're reflecting his light and to be salt. So I'm just going to just make a suggestion. I'm going to make a suggestion of something you can add. And I do this, and it really spurs on great conversations. Okay? This isn't a gimmick. This isn't a tactic. It's something I really believe in my heart. And if you don't really believe this in your heart, then, you know, you have to. And we're going to expand this later. But just say, you know, I believe Jesus died for my sin and rose from the dead. And then add this. But I don't believe it just because the Bible says so. It's better than that. I don't believe it just because the Bible says so. It's better than that. And then walk away. You want to stir hunger in people? I'm telling you, what? What did I miss? What do you mean it's better than that? You mean you follow Jesus and it's not just because of the way you were raised? Oh, no, it's better than that. You mean you follow Jesus, you believe Jesus died for your sin and rose from the dead, and it's not just because, you know, that's what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches it. That's not the only reason why. You will be able to have spiritual conversations that are amazing. You're being salt and you're being light. Now, I don't say this to discourage you. I love Christian apologetics, you know, being able to answer questions. You will not be able to answer every person's question. Some people are, you know, I see guys like Hank Hanegraaff, Bible Answer Man, call that. How does he learn all that stuff? And I've never heard the guy go, wow, you baffled me. I have absolutely no idea. Chris is probably Googling it all while he's on the radio. But no, I'm just, you know, no, but I'm not that way. And you know what? I'm probably guessing you guys are probably pretty normal yourselves. Don't have answers to every question. But the one thing I can tell people, why I personally follow Jesus. I don't personally follow Jesus because I was raised in a Christian home. First 10 years of my life, I wasn't. I don't tell people that I follow Jesus because I'm a pastor and I'm supposed to and that's what they pay me to do. Okay? It's much, much better than that. It's much bigger than that. And some of you already know, you're already in your mind saying, that's true. I believe it because the Bible says, but oh, there's so much more. The world needs to know that. They got to know. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how, what happens when people do take pot shots of the Bible. Is there something you can say? Because it's usually not, they're usually not intellectually seeking, you know, real content. they're usually taking pot shots. What can you do to spur their thinking? I'm not trying to, I'm not trying to trick my friends. I'm not trying to, I'm trying to frustrate them a little bit. I'm trying to get them thirsty. What did David mean when he said it's more than that? See? That's what we're doing. Light. We're shining a light. We're being salt. Let's bow.